to make a comment or ask a question about anything that I've said, anything that needs clarification, or shall I just ask Fiona if she's got any comments? Since she's been listening to all of this, would it be good to just? Sure. I told her before she wasn't to correct me, she wasn't to contradict me. But she usually does. Darling, have you got something? Have you got a comment you want to make? Shall I bring a? I'll bring a microphone. Yeah. Go on, because they won't hear you otherwise.
Oh gosh. What you said at the beginning about the vertical dimension being more important than how we're getting on with each other, that vertical relationship having an effect on the horizontal. I think that's very important, and it's often, especially these days with books on marriage and things, they concentrate more on the horizontal, the expectations and how we're getting on with each other. But I think what you said about vertical is probably more important, because I think it helps the horizontal more than anything.
Now, what did you disagree with? That's what you agree. What did you disagree with? Go
no,
on.
I don't think I disagreed. But don't ask me about... Remember, I'm a Baptist, so I'm more... I wouldn't speak as boldly as you do about other things.
Oh, about sex, all right. Well, I thought it was going to be about parenting for a moment. Shall we ask the children what they think? Claire, no. Claire is shaking her head. What about Chris? Shall we ask him what comments on his parents' marriage? No. Perhaps it would be better not to. I think we have. No, I know him well enough. Anybody else like to just ask a question or just make a comment of any sort? Go on, please. Katie.
You say our marriage is actually for the benefit of others.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the culture that we're living in that makes you feel that your service actually sometimes makes it feel like it's detrimental to your marriage or to your partner, children, or being children?
Yeah. I mean, that is the challenge, isn't it? Because that's what 1 Corinthians 7 is saying. It's saying that if you're serving God as a married person, you've got two huge concerns. Not one more important than the other. Paul is absolutely clear about that. You've got Steve and the children, and you've got your service of God. And so you have to work harder than the single person to relate that, so that you serve God in a way that doesn't damage your relationship with Steve or your parenting of the children in any way. And I don't know if that's... I mean, I think sometimes we think things are cultural, which are actually true of all cultures. I don't know. Perhaps there are folks who here are familiar with other cultures where... I suspect in many cultures that's going to be a real challenge. Go on, please.
I get the feeling from this passage in Corinthians 7 that Paul really isn't encouraging that marriage at all. Can't see it. Pick out a few things, but I'm not convinced.
Well, are you happy about the fact that he's saying it's not sin to marry or not to marry? It's not a sin issue. Verse 28, verse 36, was that right? He's saying so as a matter of wisdom. I mean, I would agree with you. I think he does seem to say, you know, you'll be very wise not to marry. And maybe that's in the face of all cultures, I think it would be fair to say, which have encouraged people into marriage pretty strongly. And, you know, our hormones and everything else that encourage us into marriage very, very strongly. And it's good to be reminded. And I think it's important in, you know, I'm assuming everybody here is married in the St. Ebbs congregation, that the singles in the congregation are not getting the message that, you know, that marriage is the only state to be in. That's where it all happens. I mean, I think it is an important corrective to that. You know, often singleness is very painful for people. Some people choose it, but many, many don't. And I think the example of Jesus Christ and what Paul says here is a big encouragement to the single. And the lesson for them from chapter 7 is to seize the opportunity for Christian service, which they have, that's a little bit clearer and simpler than it is for us as the married. So yeah, I think you're right. I think he is, you know, he is firing a shot across the bows of those of us who are wanting to say, well, marriage is really the state in which we all want to end up. So that, yeah, please at the back.
Right, you know, in Genesis 1, be fruitful and increase in number. Do you think that command still applies to married couples today, so that is obligatory? God-fearing couples to have children if they can? And do you think it's sinful to say, well, let's not even try?
I'm sorry you've asked me that question, King, because it's one that I have not made my mind up about. I've worked with people in our marriage prep team in Cambridge who have said, we ought to raise this with couples, and we ought to have, in particular, we ought to question couples who are planning not to have children, you know, because of Genesis 1. But I really don't know. I mean, we live in a hugely overpopulated world. And there are unwanted children who desperately need homes. What do you think? You wouldn't have asked me the question if you didn't have... You probably got thought it out. You can't get off the hook again. When you got to your feet, you became the speaker. Come on.
Well, I just wondered whether it is still... I suspect that it is still... And then the next question would be, so what does kind of being the increased number of kids, how affected are we by the culture, and what's an appropriate number of kids? Like, we've got three. My mum said, when I told her about our third kid, she said, why don't you do that? You've got a boy, you know. Why don't you do that? the culture will also impact, like, what we reckon is an appropriate number of kids, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I am as anybody else with a strong and clearly thought out theological answer to this one, because I'm as puzzled as you are, I think. I mean, I really don't know. We do try to talk to couples before they get married about the possibility of childlessness, and encourage people to think about it before they encounter it, because it is so painful. Again, I think in a culture which just expects to be able to have what it wants when it wants it, physically, whatever way it might be. And so, you know, couples think, well, we can have contraception for 10 years and then we'll suddenly have a family, and it can be a huge disappointment when that isn't possible. I'm genuinely puzzled. It seems to me there is a mandate, a creation mandate, for us to reproduce. But it seems to me there would be other things that might well be saying, you know, we shouldn't be doing that indiscriminately. You know, maybe we should be ready for childlessness in order that we might be able to adopt or do some of the things that families are not able to do. Yeah, go on, please. But the scripture doesn't give us any clue to expect that, does it, unfortunately, along the way? I mean, it would be lovely if there were some signals in scripture that... Sorry? There's nothing in the New Testament... Okay, yeah. It would be an argument from silence, but yeah. Right, on this difficult conundrum... let's see if we've got any comments or questions on any other area of things. Yes, please. Thank you, and thank you. That's a helpful corrective. I meant only one remark about counsel. I didn't intend to dismiss it. It was a dismissive remark, I know, but it was the quotation was from that non-Christian. Sociologist saying that, or maybe a psychiatrist actually, saying that counseling raises our expectations maybe to an unrealistic level, and that one of our problems with marriage is we go in with such high expectations, the reality of marriage is so different, and then we cope badly with the reality, which is why I think the Christian teaching is so realistic. And it doesn't tell you marriage is going to be this wonderful haven and meet all your needs and be just comforting and cosseting. I did not mean to be dismissive of counseling generally, and obviously counseling is a huge, normal Christian pastoring of one another. You know, it clearly comes under the wider banner of counseling. No, I certainly don't think, and I mean, as somebody who spends a fair amount of his time counseling, pre-marriage, post-marriage, divorces, all those sort of things that go on, I'm certainly not meaning to totally dismiss it. It certainly has a part to play. You know, there are issues about sort of psychiatry and the framework within which some non-Christian counseling is done, which obviously gives people pause. Although I have to say, I often think, you know, non-Christian psychiatrists are able to help Christians. And I think non-Christian marriage counselors can often help Christians. They may not. They may counsel on very bad things. But, there is wisdom all over the place that we can pick up and assess against what the Bible is saying to us. Did you want to come back on that? I've said enough to redeem myself on counseling. I didn't mean to be as dismissive as I was. I'm sorry, I was scoring cheap runs at that point. 6-6 is in and over. Cassie, come on.
This is more of a practical thing. I don't know if you, Fiona, have any top tips on kind of maintaining your marriage in a healthy way, both vertically and horizontally, when you have very, very, very small children.
We're very much better at telling you. Cassie was asking, had Fiona and I any top tips for keeping a marriage healthy and keeping the vertical dimension there, particularly under the pressures of a small family? Is that right, Cassie? Have I relayed it? And I think we can tell you how to get it wrong over and over again. Darling, what would you say? Can I get the pass the mic?
Well, I might just repeat what I was saying there. I think the most important thing, actually, for the husband in headship, is to free the wife for at least a little bit of time to have a quiet time. Because if her vertical relationship is healthy, it really does help the horizontal, and vice versa. So, in other words, looking after the little children for each other in order to free each other for a time of quiet is, I think, quite important. But also spending time together, if you can, you know, set aside some time to spend, you know, together. And you have to sometimes carve that out of the week quite carefully with your diary. But, spending some time together and, I don't know, grannies, babysitters or whatever, thinking carefully about the time you're spending. And also it goes back to Katie and what she was saying about having an open home and balancing. The children, I think, need to know they are important. I think many of us have friends in our generation where the children have been brought up, especially in a vicarage, where they felt they didn't matter, but the church mattered, and mum and dad had time for everybody else, but they didn't have time for me. You often get people growing up resenting Christianity because they were brought up in a home like that. And I think children need to know they are far more important than your work. But that doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't work to have an open home. But I think you need to have those priorities, that you do spend time with each other. The children come high in the priorities, not the lowest in the priorities, in terms of work too. I think those things need thinking through.
I think probably Fiona was very good at making that priority. And I was just fortunate in a change of job 20 years ago when Chris was 6, Claire was 4, Nick was about 6 months, when I was able to impose my own timetable on my day and was able to say I will do nothing between, well, I think it started at between 4 and 7, and then I could keep those 3 hours free every day. When Fiona was at her lowest ebb, the children having exasperated her beyond belief at that point, and I was able to come in, the sort of cavalry coming over the hill, and reinforce for those 3 hours until they were safely in bed when I could go off to a meeting or something later in the evening. But few of us we'll be in working circumstances where we can do that, but where it is possible, that was, I think, for us, was enormously helpful. I think where we've fallen down, Cassie, is in time for one another. I think our marriage has been poor, particularly poor on that front. Fiona was very good at maintaining the priority of the children and the need for them, if they were growing up in a vicarage, to get the time and attention they deserved, to keep that time free from church things, and the church was very understanding in allowing it. But I think I have been bad in not giving Fiona enough time to herself and for ourselves. I've not been good at, you know, booking up evenings together and taking her out and doing all the playing tennis against her. And I've always refused to play any game against her that I know she'll regularly beat me at. So we don't play squash, we don't play we don't play golf, and we don't play table tennis. Those are the two things I steer well away from. I think that's been a weakness of our marriage. And I would be a lot more sanctified today if I'd allowed it to happen. We must draw to an end. Jonathan, yes.
Can I just say, Mark, that I think that having been married here longer than anybody else, years, that I would warmly recommend to those who aren't already doing so, the practice of reading the Bible and praying together every day.
Yes.
However short, it is so just a prayer to the breakfast table of prayer.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I think it's the greatest privilege in marriage.
Thank you. Yes, and I love the way you've stressed the regularity of it, because I think sometimes we want to go for quantity and quality, when actually just to do it regularly and make it a part of life is so important. And certainly in talking to people about their own individual Bible reading, you find again and again people who have never... I always ask people, did you brush your teeth this morning? And they all say yes. And I say, well, why did you brush your teeth this morning? And they said, because if I, you know, my teeth will fall out. And I said, yes, but that's not the only reason. And I get out of the fact it's become a habit. We brush our teeth because we're convinced it's valuable, and it's become a habit. We're all convinced the Bible is valuable, but many of us have never let it become a habit. And that's, I think, Jonathan, one of the things I would say with Fiona and I, we don't have great, elaborate, wonderful prayer times, but we have tried. We use a little book by John Edison called Step by Step, which I'm trying to get back into print at the moment. And we've used it for 25 years or so. Now, sorry, I'm rambling. Any other final thoughts? Questions or thoughts? When I say... Come on, please.
Maybe this is a bit off the topic, but what's probably the most important habit as a dad that you have? Most valuable?
Well, I think I would still say that, of just... trying to walk closely with God by feeding on His Word every day. And I'm sorry, it's just such a, you know, such an unexciting, unoriginal thing. But I think for me, the most important thing throughout my converted life, and it is foundational to parenting, to being a husband, to trying to be a father, feeble vicar, has been just a daily time with God. First thing in the day, getting up, spending time in His Word, letting Him talk to me as me, not as husband or father or vicar or anything else, but just as His son, who so needs His correction, His reproof, His training in righteousness every single day. So I think that's the best thing I could say. Thank you. Oh, she's going to... Sorry, here we go.
I'm not going to disagree. But I'm going to. But in terms of a dad, he wouldn't probably even have noticed it. But I've noticed that, in a sense, as a dad, at the different stages, rather like we were saying, when the children were little, 4 till 7 was family time. We tried not to answer the phone. We tried to give the children time. He made it very wild in the bath and all the rest of it. So they had huge amounts of fun. By the time they were older, I think you adapt. As the children get older, to different ways of doing things, obviously. And by the time the boys, for instance, were coming home late after water polo, after school, that was late in the evening, the timetables had changed, but Mark still tried to put aside some time. So he would make sure that his meetings were finished if he could, and give half an hour, 10 till 10:30 or so, to be with the boys, was one at a time, because they were 6 years apart. And that was actually important. They might have been just watching a film, 20 minutes of a film each night, and you know, take a couple of weeks to watch it. But there was time with them, even though it was a short time, and it was every day. And then there was, I think, that sort of thing. You have to think about the time you're spending with them and make it something that they would enjoy, or perhaps not even as deliberate as that. But if one of them really enjoys kicking a ball around, that's important for them. And I think Mark was very good at that, but he wouldn't say so.
Not quite enough of that. Thank you very much. Pete, we're past our promised time. Thank you.
Just to say, Mark, enormous thanks and a piano for your wisdom. That has done us good, hasn't it? And there you are.